Flavors of Bombing. That's what's coming up on the Art of Bombing Episode 7 re-release.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Art of Bombings Flashback Fridays. I'm your host, Dan Bubas Jr. This is where we go back in time and re-release previous episodes. Today, we're re-releasing Episode 7. I was joined by the very funny comedian Spencer Dobson. He was based in the Midwest, and we talked about the different flavors of bombing and comedy, and he jammed on my cigar box guitar, and we had a good time. That's the description of the podcast right there. I guess I'd say I don't want to give you too much, but that's what I'm going to put in the text description of this. So I guess I didn't give you anything I wasn't already going to give you. But that's what's coming up today. Before we get to that, I do just a couple things. I hope you're signed up for the newsletter. It just went out today. I wrote an article about getting booked or booking yourself on independent shows and tours. A lot of people have been asking me about my tour because I put a tour together this summer that I'm in the middle of. I'm going to 9 different states. I've got 20 different cities that I'm going to. And people have been asking me left and right about how I put this together, how I got myself booked. And so I wrote a big article that was in the newsletter. So if you're not part of the Art of Bombing newsletter, you're not going to get that article. But there's good news. You can still sign up for the newsletter, and anybody that signs up for the newsletter this for the month of July, I will still send you that newsletter. I'll make sure you get a copy of that newsletter so you can read that article. All you got to do is head over to artofbombingpod.com, go over to the contact tab, and subscribe to the newsletter. I can't talk. Almost had a hard time saying subscribe. I know I'm probably in a way better mood than you guys are expecting for a Friday, but that's why it's Friday. It's Friday. It's the 4th of July weekend. If you celebrate Independence Day, I hope you have a great 4th of July weekend. If you don't celebrate 4th of July, I still hope you have a great weekend. I want everybody to have a great weekend doing whatever they're doing. I'm going to go to a wedding. That's what I got to do. I got to go. My cousin's getting married on Saturday, and I'm going to the wedding. So that'll be a good time. So I'm just excited that the weekend's here. So last thing I want to talk about that I did not include in the newsletter, and I forgot to mention on this last episode of The Art of Bombing, I have scheduled another electronic press kit seminar. It's how to build EPK for your success is the name of the seminar. You can head over to blitzedentertainment.com to register for that. It's $30 to register. It's not a lot of money. It's a 2-hour workshop that we do. I go through all the nuts and bolts of how to put together a great EPK. I've had lots of good feedback. I've done the workshop several times now. I get positive feedback every time that I've done it. So if you want to improve your EPK, or if you don't have one and you want to know how to build one, I recommend taking this class. Again, go to blitzedentertainment.com and hit the events tab, and you'll see the event for that. You can register there. And it is an online thing. It isn't in person. We do it over Zoom. Again, it takes a couple hours. So if you want to step up your promotions, go check that out. It's good. A lot of people have been very thankful. And like I said, they've given me a lot of positive feedback. It's helped a lot of people. So do that up. All right, that's all I got for today. I hope again everybody has a great weekend, and we'll see. I guess I won't see you, but we'll be back on Tuesday with a regular episode. And in the meantime, have a great weekend and enjoy.
you just got done playing my cool little cigar box guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of made me mad because you like played it way better than I ever have.
Do you want me to kick out some jams for you guys real quick?
Oh, if you want to, you want to get down on this? Oh, well, look at this, guys.
He's oh, I'm not shy. Out. I'm a multi-talent.
Cool. I wish I had a guitar cable for it so we could plug it into the mixer. But
what is a triple threat who is not threatening? What's the term for that?
I don't know. But...
There we go. That's a whole lot of Rosie, right?
I think so. I'm not...
Let's see. That's... Nah, forget it.
Yeah, there we go. That's pretty good. But it's also just, you know, it is out of tune, way out of tune. But that is still pretty cool. You still play it way
so the,
than
the
right.
Guy, you did a show, a guy liked you. It's a cigar box. So
it's a
wooden
box
with a plug in it.
Yeah, he made it. He makes these. He made these out of his garage. Like, and they're numbered. If you look at the back of it, mm-hmm. It has a number on it. Because he handmade them. And he was selling them to a company in, like, Northern California.
Right.
But he would also make them for other musicians. They were it was actually featured in like a guitar magazine
that's
at one
awesome.
Time and stuff too.
But. Had I known, I'd learn another song and I'd Zoe Dashanelle your ass. But
I guess not gonna happen today. I didn't give you that warning, but that's all right. That's still cool though. But yeah, I at one point I need to learn how to play it. That's what I need to do.
Do you play regular guitar?
I do not,
okay.
And that's why I have that. But I need to get this other guitar that I have back here. It won't stay in tune because I think the tuning pegs are really loose. I need to get the tuning pegs replaced is what happens.
Because
it is very dusty. It's dusty back here. But I had it cleaned one time and new strings put on
mm-hmm.
by a friend but they just couldn't keep it in tune. And they're like, probably want to take this in and get new tuners on it.
You are in the golden age of YouTube where you won't get to go to a strip mall to meet a guy who's got a side gig giving guitar lessons
that's
to
true.
People who don't practice.
That's
so
true.
You're missing that.
Yeah, I am missing
but
that.
But what you do get to do is get a portal into the home of a guy who's trying to make money giving guitar lessons on YouTube. And some of those are, everything's there. So
if
you're willing to practice.
And I've even watched some videos on the guitar box, the cigar box guitar, because I also have, and I'm not sure where it is right now because it's packed away somewhere, but I have a slide for it.
Oh, cool.
Too. So
yeah, that seems like the right
glass slide for it. So,
but this you could also like you could just do a beer bottle, no problem.
Oh, for sure,
super
yeah,
super cool.
Yeah,
you look tough.
Oh yeah, I look really tough doing a beer bottle. That'd be pretty awesome.
Uh-huh.
But that's not music. Isn't what this podcast is all about.
Nope.
This is about bombing on stage. And you've been doing comedy for quite a while.
Over
20 years.
Which with my level of success, you would think that doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
Why are you still 20 plus!
Yeah, right, wow. Huh. But you've been out in LA and then you come back.
My mother got cancer. I did Aspen in 2000, which is, that was a big deal.
That
at
is
the time.
A big deal.
Steve
oh,
Martin
yeah,
was
deal.
There. They read the Simpsons did a live reading. Like, that was great. I got to LA, and this is just a quick side note as to why my life is ruined. But I'm from North Dakota, and I've worked in restaurants. So that means I'm an alcoholic. So
wow.
I got to Los Angeles and all that stuff kind of crashed. So I spent a couple of years trying to relearn how to function as a human being. And then Bush got into office. And then I spent a little time really focusing on trying to keep the world from blowing up. And then my mom got cancer. So I went home and I had to take care of her. And then she passed away. And then I looked after my grandma and because she was in her 90s and she passed away. And so here.
Wow. That's
shit
heavy.
Happens, man.
That's heavy.
Yeah, sure.
Wow.
You know,
it is heavy, but yeah. That's
life.
It is life. It's true. I mean, and that's very commendable for you to come back and take care of your family. Because, you know, some people, there's a lot of selfish people that won't do stuff like that.
Well, it's
so
not like
cool.
It's not like I was crushing it, LA, at the moment.
Well,
I think whenever you're in LA, there's always hope.
Oh, yeah.
But obviously. At the same time, what are you going to do, leave them in a ditch? I mean, people say that, but it's like, what are you doing with your parents, you selfish son of a bitch?
Right,
Where is this pothole that's full of people's 75-year-old dads?
Right? Yeah, that's very true. But no, but still. It's
can
still
you swear
cool.
on this?
Oh, yeah. This
okay,
is just,
good.
Yeah, you can, yeah, this is just going on the internet, so.
Right on.
So, swear away. Just
great.
It's all fine. I always, even if there's no profanity in it, I always put explicit on it, just because I know
right.
that. A lot of times there's profanity.
Well, and because you can edit now, you can also go back and add extra swears.
Yeah,
if you
exactly. If I don't feel like there's enough profanity in it, I can just go, like, add, like, you know, swear words. I can just be like, fuck, shit,
yeah.
excuse me,
yeah.
fuck, cop. you know, like I'm having
to be like, well, I started doing comedy at a Bible study because I just felt that Jesus was very moving and I wanted a way to reflect my virginity and my wholesomeness through laughter. And so I fill people's spirits with joy, and then you can go back in
and then be like, God damn, son of a fucking bitch,
I fill people's spirits with cockfuck shit.
Exactly.
And Jesus.
That's exactly what I can do. And that's what I do.
That sounds like a great podcast.
Right? It's just all profanity. This is probably going to be the most explicit one so far, but whatever.
Sure. Okay.
I don't care.
The other thing is, I do a political podcast and we don't swear at all.
Oh, okay.
So I got a lot of swears built up.
Oh, well, that's fine. You can swear away on this because I don't care. This is just us having a conversation about, you know, bombing on stage. So.
Okay.
So we got a little back history on you. So you were in L.A., came back to take care of family. You're doing well now. You're married to a wonderful woman.
Yeah, my wife's fantastic.
She is fantastic. I've met her. She's great. Comedy seems to be going good. But
not too bad. Summer's a little rough, but the winters are doing just fine.
Summers are always
good. That's everybody's story.
Yeah, that's everybody, especially in the Midwest. Even comedy clubs struggle in the summertime. In fact, a lot of comedy clubs in the Midwest don't even run in the summertime.
Yeah,
they'll do seasonal.
Just
they just close for the summer because everybody's going outside and doing things.
The lake.
Yeah, the lake, exactly.
The lake kills everything.
The lake does in the summertime. But I'm sure since you 20-plus years, you've got to have some good stories of...
Where to begin? Can I
shows.
Do multiple?
Well, yeah, we're going to do a couple.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Let's start at the... And I should tell you, if I hadn't had thousands and thousands of good shows, we wouldn't be having this conversation, right? Everybody bombs, though.
Oh, everybody
I'm
does.
I'm
sure
you've established that.
Oh, yeah, and that's why I'm doing this podcast, because I feel like it's an interesting thing. A lot of podcasts, you know, when they interview comedians, it's all like, hey, how long you been doing comedy? What's your goal? Blah, blah, blah. Where are you from? It's all about getting to know the comic. And, like, there's so many podcasts that are like that. There's not a lot like this, because I feel like there can be a lot learned from bombing.
Yeah,
that's how you
I
get better as a comic.
Absolutely.
And that's why I've kind of, like... That's the way I'm trying to approach this, is I want people to, like, you know, I'm not, like, my target audience probably isn't just regular people. It's more for, like, comics and stuff.
So this got me thinking about the different flavors and styles of bombings one will encounter.
Oh, yeah.
So my first, it wasn't the first time I bombed, but it was the first time I bombed. It was my first road gig. I went to a place in Kansas. The comedian who, and God bless Bruce Murray, he was a sweet comedian from Minneapolis. I believe he's still alive. And you've heard of people taking people on the road that are really easy to follow to make themselves look like
Jesus. Yeah.
I think that and the fact that I had a car made me like
that's a
prime choice to open for him.
More of a thing, I think, than the being a bad, like being able to make them look better is being able to take them places.
Yes.
Like if you're a comedian just starting out and you have a car.
Right.
And you can drive people, that's you're in good.
Yeah, and at the time, you know, there weren't as many comedians at the time, and there weren't as many open micers at the time, so that was a definite... So, first of all, I didn't know how to dress for my... I didn't know what my persona was, so I was a 22-year-old kid with a mullet and a shirt and tie, which I never wore on stage, but I thought since it was a road gig, since it was a professional gig, I should wear a shirt and a tie, because I wanted to look like a pro. And I don't remember much of my act, to be honest with you. I just know that you've seen fear.
Oh, for sure.
On stage before.
I've had it.
And I was dripping it, and I had to do my time, and I just, you know.
It sounds like my first road game.
Yeah, and it was terrifying, and the moral of the story is know your act so well that you can do it when you're in a panic attack.
Yep.
And I think the most important thing, and this goes through, for me at least, throughout the whole thing, like them and assume they like you. You know, like the more polarized the country gets, the easier it is to go, well, I'm in a town full of rednecks and they're going
to,
well, maybe.
And to clarify that them.
The audience.
Yes.
The people out there, no matter what you're thinking about. And at the time, I lived in Minneapolis. And I don't remember thinking they were hicks or rednecks, because I'm from North Dakota, so you can't
out-redneck
me.
It's
impossible. But just, you can't assume that they hate you. The audience wants you to do well, no matter what. Like, I think that's a really important thing to learn.
That is actually
because nobody is
a good concept. Because you're right. People don't come to a comedy show hoping somebody... gonna do terrible, except
like,
other comics.
There's five people in the audience that are, and they're terrible human beings, but for the most part, people are going, please don't make this be a piece of shit.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point.
the second thing is, again, really know your act. So if you get flustered, and they weren't mean, they were very nice, but to me it was 1,000 deaths.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I did somebody else's joke. Which was, I went back, there's no way they're ever going to know, but I'm like, I'm really sorry. I did, because I panicked, and I didn't know what to do, and I did your thing, and it never happened again.
So it wasn't like, you just like...
Oh, no.
And like, it was just a...
I was a caged animal, filling their time, trying to get words to come out, with no, you know...
And I've seen that happen before. Mm-hmm. I've seen other comics where like, they like, I don't know if they panicked or what, but they... said something, and then as soon as they said a joke, they realized they're like, oh man, I can't believe I said that. That's not even my joke.
And exactly. But, well, and it was like, I knew it wasn't my joke.
Yeah.
It was, and I felt dirty doing it, but it's like, I have to do 7 more minutes.
Oh man.
And they hate me. And they would kind of titter, and they, you know, and I'm sure if I watched the tape, it's not as bad as it felt, but all the fear was kicking, and I was new. You know,
mm-hmm. Do you feel like when you're on stage, like if you're bombing, and even like, I don't know if it's like this for you, but for me, even when I'm doing okay or doing well, like I'm analyzing as I'm performing. Like I have so many things going on in my mm-hmm. brain, and like if I miss a joke, even if the audience doesn't know, I'm immediately like thinking to myself, "Oh, you fucked that up. You missed your punchline. You missed this." And I'm thinking this as I'm telling my next jokes, you know, and then I'll get off stage. Then I'll remember a joke that I might have forgotten.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, I'm like, oh, that was a horrible set. But people will be like, oh, that was so amazing. You did great. And I'm like, no, I didn't. And,
but they don't know. They don't know what your list was.
Yeah, they don't. But I don't know. For me, when I do that, I feel like I'm bombing, even if I'm not.
I've developed this really weird sixth sense-y kind of thing. It's not really a sixth sense. That's not describing it accurately. But what will happen is, and I really try not to think. I really try to be in the moment and try to deliver the material, mm-hmm. try to create, like, that moment. So it feel, even though I've done it a million times, you want it to feel like it's brand new. And, yeah. I mean, sure, I'm reading people's faces, and I'm like, I try, now that I have some skills, I try to, like, if people are talking, I try to eye contact them before anything else and try and...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I found if you do the act to everybody, it makes them feel part of the show.
I try to do that.
But now my brain has started going, you forgot to do the Pringles bit. Like, 5 jokes ago, you were supposed to put that in there, and for some reason, I've got this, like, Rolodex in my head now that I'll just have this thought, and it'll be like, you need to do this one here, and it's like, thanks for doing that, Brain. I appreciate that.
Which, that's good.
It's super good. It's super good. Because I don't, I trust my memory to a point, but I also try to work in new stuff pretty regularly, which is a great way to keep it fresh, but it's also a great way to forget what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Back to bombing, another trick, and this happened so many times when I was young, I can't give you a specific, but it's your 5 in, 10 in, and they're not laughing, and so you get mad, or they heckle you, and they, you know, a little old lady says something cute, and you go, fuck you, shut your fucking face, people fucking bought tickets to come to a goddamn comedy show not to hear you talk about your fucking cunt, or whatever.
Yep.
You know, here's a better way to do that. Not like that.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, people are being part of the show, and they're having fun. Mm-hmm. And so if they address you, address them with courtesy, and let, for 2 reasons. 1, basic human dignity. 2, especially if it's a woman of any age, you have to let them go on long enough that the people around them hate them. So that when
that's
you,
actually a good, good
then when
point.
You attack them, you don't have to do much.
Yeah, because then the crowd will be on your side already.
I did a show at the Cleveland Improv. It was an MC. It was a million years ago. And it's this big stadium room, and it's like stadium seating. Mm-hmm. So the back of the room is above you and really far away. And I don't remember how many people they sat, but it felt like a million. It was probably 300.
Wow, that's
but
that's
but
a
it's
lot.
Like a movie theater. So yeah. They're still like far. So this woman back corner, right? And I learned how to do the room. I learned mm-hmm. how to get good at it. You bomb a lot there as the MC, but you just like learn how to open. You learn how to like acknowledge where you're at and like talk to them. You know, so I won them. So I got kind of good at it finally. But this woman way in the back, really drunk, sold out show, and she's just nabs and blah, blah, bam, bam, bam. And I just stood there and, like, kind of eyebrows up and nodded my head. Until she realized 300 people were all staring at her and it's complete silence except for her drunk bullshit. And then I just go, oh, uh-huh. And that was all I said. And the whole room, like, exploded. So, be, you know, you win more if you're nice to people.
That's in life in general. If you're just nice to people, you know, you'll be treated better. But
if you're bombing and you don't go, if instead of going, fuck you people, you go, I guess you didn't like that one or whatever.
And, you know,
or even don't acknowledge it. Sometimes if you don't acknowledge it, go ahead.
I was just going to say a good example of this, actually, you know, what you're talking about, where like if you tell a joke and it bombs, and not getting frustrated by it. So last night, I did a show in Omaha. I was on their contest, their monthly contest called Clash of the Comics or whatever.
Yeah.
And I won.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But the funny thing is, the first joke I told bombed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could have heard pin drops. Like,
sure.
Nobody laughed. And then I just was like, well, and I said it to them. I was like, well, you didn't like that one. And then, of course, they laughed. And then I just kept going, and I did more, and I won them back.
Yeah.
So I immediately won them back, and I was talking to one of the judges, and she even said, you know, it was actually the manager of the club.
Is Colleen still the
Daisy is the manager. Daisy Curtis, I think is her name.
Okay.
But anyway, she said that was one of the, you know, because I when they announced my name, if you could have got a picture of my face,
right,
it was complete shock. Like, right. I was like, what? I won? Because
I
didn't think I was going to because of that one joke bomb.
Sure.
But she was like, one of the things about it was, yeah, you had one joke that bombed, but you handled it like a professional.
Yeah.
You acknowledged it.
Right.
And then you moved on. You didn't let it fluster you.
Right.
You didn't let it make you freak you out. And you didn't, like, just freak out. You just, like, acknowledged it and moved on. And then you totally won the crowd back. Because I did. The rest of the set was amazing.
Well, you know who was amazing at bombing, and not for me to speak for him, but he's no longer with us. But if in the 90s, Mitch Hedberg was in Minneapolis all the time.
Oh, yeah, yep.
And I worked with him a couple times. I hung out with him a bunch of times. I watched him a million times. And you wanted him to bomb as a comic because his throwaways and the things he would say after you didn't like the joke were so good.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Good responses.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he crawled behind the curtain and go, I was hoping there'd be a better show on the other side.
That's funny.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
You know,
I feel like, too, like, for me, at least in the situation last night, like, because, you know, I bomb a lot when I'm at open mics because I'm trying new jokes, new things, and you're going to bomb. That's part of the process.
Course. Yeah.
But if I haven't, if it wasn't for the fact that I've bombed as much as I have in the process, I would have probably handled the situation different last night.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's because I bombed so much that it didn't faze me. That one joke, bombing, just was like, all right, just got to move on.
Well, you know, I read something really early in my career that really helped to deal with exactly what you're saying and doing exactly what you're saying, and it was about empathy. And they were talking about, like, why people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Hitler, those were literally the examples that they gave, like, why audiences liked them, and it was because they believed it. So even if you're, like, if you believe in what you're doing, audiences are more likely to follow you.
Oh,
so
yeah,
even if you're
sure.
doing the greatest joke in the world, if you're like, well, two guys walked into a bar, I guess. Unless that's your thing.
No, I know what you mean. I guess what I call that, as far as like in comedy, I call it committing to the bit.
Yeah, totally.
You got to commit to the bit. But it's the same concept.
Yeah.
You have to believe in your material.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with that. Because if you don't believe in your material, the audience isn't going to believe
it.
And that's just like with confidence on stage, too. Like, if the audience see, if you go up on stage and you show fear, they're going to know you're afraid. And then they feed off that.
Well, and it's a common problem. Like, they're, you know, and this is a critique of a lot of people. I'm not going to name names. But there are some very famous comedians who are swinging for the fences and their materials, meh. But they sell their material and believe in their material so much that they're doing great. And you've seen comics, where it's like, this is the best material I've ever seen, but you don't even believe in your material. So, you know, what are you going
to do? Which is kind of sad, but you're right. Yeah, that's interesting.
And it's that comfort. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I listened to your episode with Timmy Williams, and he was talking about corporates, which you can't you can't do that. You can't freak out at a corporate.
Oh, no, you can't. No.
And that is where bombing with dignity, because corporates, the difference between a comedy club and a corporate show is people said, let's go to a comedy club and see a comedian when they go to a comedy club. When they go to a corporate show, they go, oh, my boss brought in this idiot who's going to try and tell jokes, and I'm going to try and get as many free drinks as I can before my wife passes out, and I'm going to try not to punch Fred.
Yep.
And
exactly,
it's just your job not to swear and
yeah.
Yeah, and try and just make the person who signed the check happy.
Yep.
Try not to burn the place
that's
down.
That's exactly it.
And because you kind of mentioned, like, and it's true, like, you're like, I could do this show better if the lady who signs the check would leave the room. I know how to make you laugh.
Oh, yeah.
But I need to make her happy.
Yep.
So we can't
do rules.
We can't do this great stuff.
Yep.
But I also need to pay rent. So here we are.
Yep.
So
oh, no, I totally
let's
know.
Let's try to make it fun.
I'm doing a corporate on Thursday.
Uh-huh.
At noon.
Uh-huh.
At a picnic for a company in Iowa.
Good.
I know, but it's one of them deals where it's like, you're right, you got to pay rent.
Is it inside?
Yeah, it's in the.
Oh, thank God.
They're doing it at a community center, so it's.
That's cool.
So
there'll be air conditioning.
It'll be inside. Yeah, it'll be shade. So it's not outside. But
it's
still,
nice if there's booze.
I'm still kind of like, who does a picnic on a Thursday?
Yeah.
But whatever, I guess.
Well, I think this is what college. I didn't do colleges when I was younger, and now I feel like I'm too old to do colleges, and I don't have a thing. I don't have, like, I either need to be crippled or homosexual or get ethnic. If we could kill so many white people that there weren't that many left, then I could talk about how hard it is being white. That'd be great. I'm left-handed, but nobody cares.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody cares about it at all. I could really try and drum up some care about it, but I don't think.
You don't think they're going to be with you, huh?
Well, I mean, because it's true, though. They did used to kill left-handed babies. I mean, I could be like, you don't know how hard it is to open doorknobs when I'm left-handed.
It's like, what are you studying in college? What do you really know?
Right. Walk a mile through my left-handed. Nobody cares.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And I'm giving a hard time to what I would call identity comics, but I also think identity comics do a lot of good.
They do.
And there's a lot of
sure.
people who are getting a lot of stories out there, and comedy is a great way to get information across.
It is. It is a great way. It's a great way.
I'm jealous of your money there. Are you happy?
That's exactly it. Yeah. We're just jealous. We're just bitter, jealous comics of your success. Because you found a niche that we don't have.
There you go. There you go.
It's all about the niche. All right, well, I got a couple standard questions that
sure.
I always ask on this, too. Like, so, like, when you do bomb,
mm-hmm.
how long does it take you before you shake it off, before you're like, okay, time to move on?
Boy, again, it really depends on the tone of the bombing and where it happened. Sometimes it takes, you know, the next show helps, but if the next show's not for a week and a half, you know, it's nice if you can go, oh, here's why that happened,
mm-hmm.
instead of, I did a competition in Boston, and the waiter, I was backstage, and I had a glass of water, and I set it down, and the waiter took it, and then I got a little dry mouth on stage, and then it proceeded to get drier.
Oh, no.
And it was just one of those, like, I brought that glass of water here specifically so that that doesn't happen, and that really chapped my hide.
Oh, man.
and it was a competition, and a guy started talking like 2 minutes in.
Oh.
Like, you're in the front row at a competition. You're probably somebody's friend. I understand.
Yep.
And my opening line devastated, and then the guy started talking. So then you're like, this just feels bad.
Right.
This
yeah.
feels weird.
And I don't know. I always hate, like, I mean, I do them because it's stage time, and obviously you want to try to win, but I hate contests for that reason. Like, a lot of them.
So many reasons to hate them.
Well, yeah, but one of the main reasons is because people, they bring their friends, and then their friends think that it's not okay to laugh for anybody but their
right.
friend. They're saving all their laughter for their friend. And then it's sad because a lot of times their friend is that guy that this is their first time doing comedy,
right.
and they're horrible. And
right.
so when they do get up there, they don't even laugh for them. So then they've sat this whole show
right.
and haven't laughed for anybody, and even their own friend. They're like, and then when they do laugh for their friend, it's out of, like, pity.
Right.
And then,
well, and, like, you've done festivals where it's not a competition, and it's so nice, and you meet people, and
oh.
everybody's handshaking, and
yep.
you enjoy people, and they enjoy you. And then it's a competition, and now everybody's like, I'm going to win this $75.
Oh, for sure. And I notice it, because, you know, I do produce two different comedy
mm-hmm.
festivals.
Oh, by the way, really fun festival.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We've had a lot of kind words, and we're looking forward to you, too. But that's where, like, what you're saying, like the one, I produce two festivals, and the one in San Diego is a contest.
Mm-hmm.
It does have other showcases and stuff, but the main focus is the contest. And you mm-hmm. see that, like, comics will kind of hang out, but they really don't want to hang out with each other, because at the end of the day, they're competing for the prize.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So they're not, there's not the camaraderie. But, right. like, the other festival that I did, and it's the reason I did it the way I did, is because I'm not a fan of contests. We just wanted to have a fun festival that would raise money for a good cause, because it is for a fundraiser.
And
it was such a big difference, because the comics that came, they had fun.
Oh,
they were
so
interacting
fun.
With each other. They went and did things together. Right. You know, like, there was so much more camaraderie doing it that way. Like, and that's what festivals should be about.
And it was
really funny.
It was really funny. There were so many good people.
Oh, and there was. It was great. Everybody did well. It was a great festival. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but it was a great fucking festival.
I
love that we did that, because, like I said, I hate contests, even though I helped produce a festival that's a contest, this was just fun. And that's what I wanted.
I love doing stand-up comedy, and then a little below that is watching really good stand-up comedy. Just nothing makes me happier.
Yeah. That was a good thing. But yeah. Anyway. So it's basically kind of to the next show. That's kind of how long it kind of takes you. All right. And then when you do bomb, what do you try to take away from it? What do you try to learn from it? Like, what?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Sometimes you bomb because you are in auto mode. Like, your act so well that you're not engaged, and maybe you're not speaking clearly, maybe you're, you know, making a grocery list, and so you're literally skipping words, you're not setting something up right. You know, I've more than once sabotaged myself by being excited about the new bit, so putting it first, and then tripping over it. I don't know if I try not to do that or not. It seems like I shouldn't do that. I do it anyway.
A lot of people, they'll be like, yeah, if you're going to try a new bit, put it in the middle.
But there's also I have something about this place that I
would do. Yeah, something like you think of while you're waiting to go on stage.
Yeah, I did a private for these guys. And the joke was, what do they do? They make ethanol.
Okay.
And I said, so I looked it up on the internet, and that's why I like the internet, because it told me that ethanol is actually alcohol. There are actually distillers like yourselves that actually make gas and alcohol, and that's why I like the internet, because I know that because I looked on the internet, as compared to before, where I would have just said, shots, and then we'll see how it goes. But I tripped over one of the words, and they were just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Actually, I feel like that's what happened with my first joke that I told last night, because it was a newer bit, and I told it, and it opened with it, and it did well. But I got a little nervous, and I stumbled over some words, and I feel like people were just like, I don't get it. You know, because the premise of the joke is basically where I say, I'm saying people on the internet are dumb.
Right.
And they need to put down the internet and read a book.
Right.
Because I'm talking about being on the internet.
I've seen this bit, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. And then I'm like, I need to put down the internet and read a book. So I'm basically calling myself an idiot. But I kind of got into it, kind of said it really fast, stumbled over some words, and I just don't think it made sense.
Yeah, I did a festival, the Laugh Fest in Michigan, and the first night just demolished. And then I'm like, I have a bit, they're going to love it. I'm going to do the second night, they're going to love it. And it's this bit that's turned out to be a great bit. I still close with it from time to time about I was dating this girl. And she drank too much. She was really young.
And
wet the bed bit. Yeah.
Yep.
And I think it was just too many drunk young girls in the front row.
Too relatable.
They were like, are you saying that it's not adorable when I'm drunk all the time? And it just, and I'm like, oh, man.
Hit too close to home.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. I don't know why I switched
it
up. Because the night before, somebody said, I don't remember the way they phrased it, but the meaning was, you just did 7 minutes of next level comedy. Isn't that enough? Or something like that.
Well, yeah. And I feel like we do that, though, because at the end of the day, we're all a little narcissistic. And you get like that one show where you're like, oh, that was great.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to stop me. So you're willing to take more risks.
Exactly.
It doesn't
right.
always pay off.
And I don't know, like in LA, when I got there, it was, you're supposed to do the same bit all the time. So they go, oh, he's the guy that does the thing about the internet.
We should get
that internet guy on our show. But I don't know. I think Louis C.K. kind of broke that.
I think so too.
And I spent a lot of time trying to write at open mics in LA, and I don't think that helped me. because you when you're working stuff out, it's always a little less perfect.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to find places where I could be shitty, so then when I go to some place where they don't know me, it'll be like, holy shit.
Yeah. And then like, yeah, we don't. That's actually kind of the reason I moved back. You know, when I decided to move from San Diego, a lot of people there in San Diego were like, why aren't you going to LA if you're going to keep pursuing comedy? And I was like, because I want to go work the road for a while and I want to get better at comedy. So when I go to LA and when I feel like I'm ready to be in LA and I go do shows, they're going to be like, whoa, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I want to be tight.
Right.
And I know a lot of people that moved to LA and they kind of regressed instead of progressed.
Yeah, it's hard, so, man.
It's hard
to find time. It's hard to find. There's some great people. There's some amazingly talented people, but it's an industry town, and there's a million comics there.
Not to mention all the actors doing comedy because they're hoping to get discovered. Totally. So you got that on top of it.
And there's you know, maybe it's not the ring of people directly around the person that you want to be next to, but there's like the ring of their good talented friends, and then the next ring out is a little less talented and a little nice, and then it just keeps going.
Yep.
And there's these kind of icky people that you have to get through before you finally get in and get to
That's
the good
very
stuff.
True. Very true.
But again, I mean, hats off to people who've done it. I had some amazing shows in LA. I met some amazing people in LA. You know, when LA is good, it is so good.
Yeah. I've had a couple of good shows in LA. I mean, I never lived there, but I did go since I was in San Diego. It was easy to like go up and do some shows.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun shows out there too. So
cool.
I get that. So, I guess, we're going to wrap up here, but any advice you would have to somebody like starting out in comedy?
Somebody
any
new?
Words of wisdom?
This isn't mine, but I think it's really good advice. Take what you're doing seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously.
That's a very good advice. Apply that to life.
And be diligent.
Yes.
You know, I mean, again, not to mention Mitch Hedberg twice in one thing, but you know, for as, you know, party stony guy as he was a really, really, really disciplined writer who was constantly honing his craft,
yeah.
You know, and most of his life consisted of adventures to write about.
Yeah.
You know, and Doug Stanhope's like that too. Doug Stanhope writes constantly.
Yeah, and that's something I've actually noticed about like, and this is something I guess I've seen like in like bigger scenes where like, especially in San Diego, it's kind of seen like a lot of comics, they just go to open mics every day of their life. That's all they do.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, you don't even, you're not no comic, you're a hobby comic because you're not at an open mic every day.
Right.
And they don't live life.
Right.
And it's like they don't have experience.
Right.
So then they don't really have anything to write about.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like as a comic or artist, you need to go experience life.
Yeah. And also write on paper and write on stage. That's also
well, you do need to write, Oh, no, I know, but I mean.
But it's true.
But if you don't have any experience, you have nothing to write about.
Exactly.
That's what I was going with.
Live stuff, document it. But,
yeah.
but there's, I went through phases where I didn't write anything down, and I went through phases where I wrote everything down.
Oh, yeah.
And in the middle is the sweet spot.
I'm terrible about not writing anything down.
But
I have a really good memory. So
well,
I
you think you
up.
Do.
Well,
but you probably lose a lot of stuff. And you also, when you put it on paper, you are able to explore things that you have time to reflect, so you can go deeper and you can find things that weren't there.
This is true.
And then when you do it on stage, you inherently edit because you're getting feedback from the audience.
Yep.
Okay, I'm babbling. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's right. But you're right. You're right, though. I totally agree with that. Like, I do need to write. Like on paper.
Yeah, damn.
I'm terrible about that. But all right, thank you, Spencer, for joining me. Do you got any upcoming? Well, this isn't going to come out for like not this week, but it'll be out like in 2 weeks.
I'm at the 24th in New Hope at the New Hope Cinema Grill. I'm in August 8th. I'm going to be doing the Britain City like concert thing.
You mean in Sioux City?
No, Britain, South Dakota.
Oh, Britain. Oh, okay.
And then the New
Hope
Cinema Grill
in
Minneapolis.
Doing a thing. And
oh, not Britain Hack.
Okay, I was like, he's
is
doing it.
Is his name Hakey or is his actual name Britain Hack?
It's Hacky. Britain Hack.
Oh, that's rough.
I know. He's like, and then he talks about, like, at road, like, people always do Hacky jokes about his name.
Yeah.
but it's easy. But,
well,
yeah.
and none of my business. Well, anyway, that's rough.
Okay.
That's rough.
So, Britain, South Dakota in August.
I think it's the 8th or 9th.
8th? All right.
But the 24th of New Hope in Minneapolis.
All right.
New Hope Cinema Grill. And then if you're in Colorado or New Mexico, I'm out there in September.
Sweet. All right. Well, thank you and good luck.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you. Are we actually leaving or just...
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production. Hosted and produced by Dan Bublitz Jr., The Art of Bombing intro music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music used in this podcast was under the Creative Commons license. If you would like to help The Art of Bombing, you can do so by subscribing, rating, and reviewing our show on whatever podcast application you use to listen to The Art of Bombing. For previous episodes, blogs, and more, visit artofbombingpod.com. Have a great week. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.